The following Dharma talk was recorded in March 2014 in St. Louis, Missouri. It is one of 8 recordings from the retreat called Suffering and the End of Suffering, taught by Bridget Rollins and John Yaffe. The retreat was sponsored by Mid-America Dharma. If you like this recording, you can find more talks at www.midamericadharma.org. For questions, we welcome your emails sent to info@midamericadharma.org. Bridget Rollins has practiced insight meditation since 1997. Recognized by the Spirit Rock Teachers Council as a community Dharma leader, Bridget co-leads the St. Louis Insight Meditation Group, teaches classes, and leads retreats. John Yaffe began practicing insight meditation in 1999 and has been co-leader of St. Louis Insight Meditation Group since 2006. He has served on the board of directors of Mid-America Dharma since 2005 and currently serves as its president. More information about Bridget and John can be found at www.dharmastl.org.
So I'd like to invite you to open your mind and your heart as you listen to these words from the Buddha, from the Dhammapada. And it's entitled, A Refuge Supreme. They go to many a refuge, to mountains and forests, to park and tree shrines, people threatened with danger. That's not the secure refuge, not the supreme refuge. That's not the refuge having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. But when, having gone to the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha for refuge, you see with right discernment the Four Noble Truths. And in this translation, Tanisaro translate dukkha as stress. So the Four Noble Truths, stress, the cause of stress, the transcending of stress, and the Noble Eightfold Path, the way to the stilling of stress. That's the secure refuge. That, the refuge supreme. That is the refuge having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. That really speaks to my heart. Don't we all yearn for a place that's safe? Don't we all long for a place where we can just relax and know that we're protected and nothing bad is going to happen to us, that no harm is going to come to us? When you imagine being in a place like that, isn't there just something in your heart that settles and that really longs for that? We live in our world, everything's uncertain. Even the things that we think are sure, if we look deeply at them, everything's uncertain. Everything can change. There's all kinds of pressures and stresses and deadlines and responsibilities and from the outside, not to say anything of the fears and the doubts and the confusion and the busyness that goes on inside. And don't you just wish sometime you could find a place where you were protected from it all? As I was thinking of that, the Gershwin song came to me, and my voice is a little crackly, but there's a somebody I'm longing to see. I hope that he or she turns out to be someone to watch over me. Wouldn't you love someone to watch over you? So we might consider, you know, where do we usually go to find relief from the stress, to find relief from suffering? Where do we find a refuge from the demands and the pressures of daily life? And, you know, we all have different ways. I mean, we wouldn't be able to survive and stay sane if we didn't have some ways of releasing the pressure valve. So some of you may find that you like exercise the best. You know, you go to the gym and have a really good workout, or you go for a run or a brisk walk or bicycle or dance or something, and physical exercise, you release all those good endorphins and you can feel a, you know, we take the edge off with that. It might be getting together with friends, going out, having a good time, you know, doing activities together. Or it might be having a good friend that I can just go and talk to, that I can talk about the stresses and the difficulties and somehow getting it out of me, and having someone else here relieves the stress. You know, there's all kinds of leisure activities that we find pleasant and we can engage in. So, you know, it might be we've got hobbies that we enjoy, listening to music, reading, watching TV, movies, playing video games. I mean, there's just a whole host of leisure activities, and our society is constantly letting us know about a new leisure activity that we could pay our money for and have fun. For some of us, it might be just going out into nature, getting away from it all, getting into the quiet and the beauty of the outdoors. For some of us, it might be a glass of wine, you know, kick back with a beer, dark chocolate, comfort foods. So it might be something that we ingest that, you know, has this little, it's interesting. I found out recently that when you eat sugar, especially refined sugar and in large quantities, that it actually releases the same kind of chemicals in your body that heroin releases. It's Lent. You could give up candy for Lent. For some of us, it's sleeping, you know, just shutting down the system. And all of this does give us some release. It does work. It can be a temporary refuge from the stresses of life. And as long as we're not harming another person or ourselves by engaging in these activities, then we might see them as wholesome, useful, that if they're used wisely, they do give us a little release from stress. You might reflect for a few moments, if you weren't at retreat right now or this weekend, how might you be taking a break from the stresses of life? And interesting, you decided to come here instead. So I'm just wondering if you see the benefits of your usual patterns of releasing stress or softening suffering, getting a break from suffering. Perhaps you have an internal wisdom that says, you know, maybe there's something more. I'd like to add to my toolbox. And if we ask ourselves the question, do any of those provide a secure refuge? A supreme refuge? A refuge having gone to which we gain release from all suffering and stress. So up until now, I have not met a powdered sugar donut, a movie, a novel, a video game that I could say is a secure refuge, a supreme refuge, a refuge having gone to which I've gained release from all suffering and stress. If any of you have found anything that is, please tell me, because I'm a comfort addict and I want to get there fast. If you've got a quick fix, then I would love to hear all about it. But I have a sense, and I see a few heads nodding, that if we really stop and consider and reflect and pay attention to our actual experience. Okay, listen to the wisdom of our experience. We'll have to admit to ourselves that these things, while they can be helpful, that they aren't giving us that total release from the stress and the suffering of life. And, you know, we might look at the metaphor of an illness. So these kinds of things, it's kind of like they're the Tylenol that we take when we have an infection, and we take the Tylenol to ease the pain of the infection. What we really need is to either get an antibiotic or surgery, antibiotic to actually cure the infection or surgery to remove the diseased tissue so that we can actually be free from the cause of the pain that we're taking the Tylenol for. And I think it's important to understand that, yes, we need the antibiotic or we need the surgery. That will get to the root. That will get to the core. But we also don't have to give up our Tylenol. It's not an either or. It's a both and. And so we want to be aware of the limitations of Tylenol and have the wisdom to find a doctor or a surgeon who can help us find a remedy for the cause that's underneath the pain. And I love the fact that the Buddha was often referred to as a physician. And there's a monk, Venerable Piyadasi Thera, and he says this: "The Buddha is known as the peerless physician, the supreme surgeon. He indeed is an unrivaled healer. The Buddha's method of exposition of the Four Noble Truths is comparable to that of a physician." The Buddha's method of exposition or explaining, teaching the Four Noble Truths is comparable to that of a physician. As a physician, he first diagnosed the illness. Next, he discovered the cause for the arising of the illness. Then he considered its removal. And lastly, applied the remedy. So, we hear the first noble truth, that's diagnosing the illness. The second noble truth, discovering the cause for the arising of this illness. The third noble truth, contemplating its removal, its cessation, its ending. And lastly, the fourth noble truth, which is the path that leads to the remedy for this illness. So in this retreat, we're focusing pretty much on the first three noble truths: the truth of suffering, the truth of the cause of suffering, and the truth of the cessation of suffering. We're not going into detail about the Noble Eightfold Path, first of all, because you can't do all that in a weekend retreat, unless we just stay on the surface. However, this whole retreat is going to be about practicing the fourth noble truth. So in a few moments, I'm going to invite you to undertake the precepts, to make a commitment to practicing the five precepts, which is the one way of describing ethical conduct. And in this retreat, we will be practicing. Hopefully we will not kill anybody. We won't steal. We won't commit sexual misconduct against anybody. We won't use speech that's harmful. And we won't come back tomorrow intoxicated. If we were all doing all of that, this would be a very unsafe place, wouldn't it? Yeah. It would be unsafe externally, but it would also be unsafe internally. So we will be practicing the path factor of what we call sila, ethical conduct, during this retreat. So we will refrain from harming living beings, from harming each other. I just heard a talk that in Burma, some monks got into a fist fight over the fans. Now, it's really hot in Burma, so maybe we can understand that. But, you know, that's not ethical conduct. So I don't think we need to worry about anybody beating us up. Can't say that outside of the meditation hall, outside in the world there. You know, we can feel safe because we know we can put our stuff here. Nobody's going to take it. We can be careful so that we're not taking anything that is not given, that we're not taking more than we need of anything. Refraining from sexual conduct. I mean, that's just a given. So you can know you're not going to get hit on at this retreat. Well, we're practicing noble silence, so. But we can feel safe. We can feel safe. And we're refraining from clouding the mind with intoxicants. And I might invite you, when you go home, to practice abstinence from alcohol, recreational drugs, TV, video games, surfing the net, and just kind of put that aside for a little bit. Any activities that, you know, if you use them too much, they cloud your mind. And just let the mind stay simple and open and uncluttered during this retreat. Also with, on a retreat, sometimes people will choose. Well, we always choose to refrain from sexual misconduct, but you might want to refrain from any kind of sexual activity during the retreat, simply because, you know, sex is an energy, and we have this sexual energy within us. If we're channeling it into sexual activity, we're dissipating the energy, and we could harness that energy to feed our practice. Also, part of ethical conduct is wise speech. And for our retreat, we're practicing noble silence. It's hard to tell a lie or speak in a way that's not helpful or unkind if you're not talking. So we're creating, again, what we're doing is creating this wonderful container that is a refuge because we're creating safety, harmlessness. You will be going home. This isn't a residential retreat. And as best you can, keep all of these things going. It may not be suitable for you to keep noble silence at home because there are people there that you usually interact with. But you can practice wise speech. You can practice wise speech and wise listening. And just make sure that your speech is true, helpful, timely, and kind. Probably even more evident is that we will be engaged in samadhi, mental training. And those path factors are wise effort. John was talking about aiming the attention and then sustaining it. That's part of effort, energy. We will be trying to cultivate positive, wholesome mental states and withdraw energy from unwholesome mental states. All part of wise effort, wise mindfulness. So this is an insight meditation retreat. Mindfulness is at the core. We will be encouraging you to make every moment of the retreat bring mindfulness, focusing the attention in a non-judgmental way on whatever is happening, not just in formal meditation, but even when you go to the bathroom, when you're walking from one place to the other. There's no break in a meditation retreat. It's all meditation. And let the effort be light. Okay, so it doesn't have to bear down. If you notice your body getting tight, then it might be you're trying too hard. You know, if you can, set an aspiration for continuous mindfulness. And as John invited us in the instructions, when the mind wanders, rather than beating it up, beating yourself up, going into criticism or, you know, oh, I can't do this. Okay, your aspiration is continuous mindfulness. Just know you're not going to do that this weekend. It's a something to aspire to. And whenever you notice that you're no longer present, you remember your aspiration, and that helps bring you back to, oh, that's right. Just be here in the present moment. Just be aware of what's arising here and now. Because it's when we can see very clearly what's going on and how it all works that the path factors of panya or wisdom arise. And so we are getting cultivating a wise view of things, wise intention. And we can see more clearly where our true safety lies. How we can get to that place of supreme refuge from suffering and the causes of suffering. So I just like to read that one more time. And I got the sutta for you, so if you would like to have a copy of that, it'll be on the table over there. This sutta always just feels like a cool drink to me on a hot day. They go to many a refuge, to mountains and forests, to park and tree shrines, people threatened with danger. That's not the secure refuge, not the supreme refuge. That's not the refuge, having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. But when having gone to the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha for refuge, you see with right discernment the four noble truths: stress, the cause of stress, the transcending of stress, and the noble eightfold path, the way to the stilling of stress. That's the secure refuge. That the supreme refuge. That is the refuge, having gone to which you gain release from all suffering and stress. So, during this retreat, may we all grow in our right discernment of these truths and their implications for us. These truths and how coming to a deeper experiential understanding of them can lead us to that refuge, the heart's sure release. The beginning of that sutta says, they go to many a refuge, to mountains and to forest and tree shrines. In the time of the Buddha, there was something called taking refuge. And one of the things, and this was at a secular level, so what you did was you went to whoever had power in the village, so it might be a king or, you know, warlord or whoever was the wealthy person, and you would pledge allegiance to that person, and then that person was responsible for keeping you safe and taking care of you. You know, so you would give them your crops and all that kind of stuff, but you would have the protection of that ruler. So when the Buddha was teaching and people were realizing the value and the beauty and the possibility of this teaching and coming to him, especially householders, well, monastics too, but when householders like us, you know, heard the Buddha speak and said, I want more, you know, I want to stay connected to this fellow. I want this guy to be my teacher. What they would do is they would go to the Buddha and they would take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and they would take the five precepts. And that was kind of a little ceremony of initiation into becoming a member of the Sangha, the broader Sangha of all people who are seeking freedom from suffering. So, for 2,600 years, people have been taking the refuges and the precepts, and it's a tradition at many insight meditation retreats to do that at the beginning of the retreat. And I'm just going to hand these out. And you'll notice that there is a little typo in the refuges. it says Tadiyampi, which is three. But next to it, it says for the second time. No, it's actually, it's for the third time. It's just a typo. So I've already talked a little bit about the precepts in talking about sila or ethical conduct. And I love how the five precepts in one sutta are described as gifts of harmlessness. That when we're living out of these precepts, it's a beautiful gift to others, the gift of harmlessness. And when you're in the presence of someone that you feel is harmless, you're able to relax. There's a letting down. There's a letting go. There's a release. And when you are becoming that harmless one to yourself, then you're providing release, refuge for yourself. So I won't say any more about the precepts. When we take refuge in Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, that could be a whole talk, but I'm just going to very briefly. We can understand Buddha as the historical Buddha, the Prince Siddhartha Gautama, who became enlightened, who awoke, became an awakened being, the Buddha. We can also, when we're taking refuge in the Buddha, take refuge in the possibility of awakening. You know, sometimes we might get a little discouraged. Is it really actually possible? Well, a human being walked this path and came to the end. And there is the possibility of awakening, so we can take refuge in that possibility. We might also understand Buddha as the knowing, that part of us that knows, the knowing of things as they are, knowing them clearly with wisdom, so we can take refuge in the knowing. When we take refuge in the Dharma, that can be seen as taking refuge and going to the teachings of the Buddha for guidance. Dharma is also translated as truth with a big T, so it's truth. Dharma also is translated as what is. So whatever is. Every moment of life, Dharma is a moment of Dharma. One speaker said, the truth of the way things are. So taking refuge, what would it be like for you to take refuge in the truth of the way things are? And then finally, Sangha. That's understood as the noble ones. And we might see it simply as the group of people who attained liberation, arhants. Sometimes it's used to refer to monastics, the communities of monks and nuns. For us, it's the community of all of those who are intent on practice. The community of those who have step firmly onto the Noble Eightfold Path and are kind of holding hands and getting there together. So these are all Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. These are all places that we can go to for our safety, go to for our refuge. And this is where we find the antibiotic. You know, the other things, they're the Tylenol. And not saying we have to give those up, but if we want a sure refuge, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha. So if you look at your sheet, of which I have none. Thank you. Okay. If you know this already, this chant, please enter into it. If you don't, please enter into it. And I'll just give, for those of you who aren't familiar with this, there's like a home note. So we sing on the home note until we see a little carrot, and then if it's up, we go up to the next pitch, and then we come back down, and if the carrot's underneath, we go down, da 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 da. So that's basically what those little marks are. You'll see a dot under the M, in the refuges. That means that that's pronounced like an ng. So Budang Saranang Gacchami, Dhammang Saranang Gacchami, Sanghang Saranang Gacchami. When we get to the five precepts, if you know that chant, just jump in. But what we'll do is I'll chant, and anybody else who knows it will chant the Pali. And we are actually singing in Pali, the language that the Buddha taught the Dharma in. And then we'll all recite the precept. So we'll chant a line and then recite that precept and then chant and recite. Okay? And there is a practice of bowing that goes with this, completely optional. I'm actually going to do like a formal bowing. And if you have a practice of formal bowing, please feel free to do that. So I'm just going to get on my knees and do a little bow towards the Buddha statue. If you want to bow from where you are, that's fine. If you want it just to be an internal bow, that's fine. If bowing doesn't do it for you, don't bow. I do like the abbot at Mid-America Buddhist Association in Augusta, Missouri. He was explaining bowing. Now, monastics will often, they'll just do a bow from the waist, but sometimes they'll do a whole prostration. And he said, the Buddha isn't a god. We're not, you know, bowing down in front of a god or a deity or an idol or anything. He said, when we bow, it's like shaking the Buddha's hand. And he said, when we prostrate, it's like giving the Buddha a hug. No prostrations here. However, has someone ever given you a really wonderful gift or done something really that you just were so grateful for? Have you noticed your body going, oh, thank you? It's just natural, you know? So when I bow, it's just expression of gratitude. Oh, Buddha, thank you so much for teaching. Thank you so much for listening to that deva that came down when you weren't going to teach because you said, this is too difficult to understand. I'm so glad that you did. Thank you for all your years. Thank you for all your lifetimes of practice that you kept coming back. Even though you didn't make it this lifetime, you kept on for all those lifetimes so that in this day and age, we have this beautiful path. So you'll notice on your sheet, it says, after bowing three times with hands in Anjali, Anjali is just palm to palm, we'll then go on with the chant. Okay? So please do whatever is comfortable for you.